With us today, welcome to Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast. I am your host, Jacob Dahlin. And with us today from Örnsköldsvik, Urban Omark. Welcome to the Swedish Junior Hockey Podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Scandlux, your home for Scandinavian luxury products for the U.S. market. You can find us at scandlux.com.
Thank you very much.
All right. So normally, I've said this in previous episodes, because we end up having a more of a geographical lesson than historical lesson, but we're going to talk a little bit about history too. But Örnsköldsvik, for the North American listener, where is Örnsköldsvik?
Örnsköldsvik is like 500 kilometers north of Stockholm. So
going up north.
Up north, yeah, but not that up north. I'm from Övertorneå in Norrbotten. That's 500 more kilometers north to the border to Finland. So for me, Örnsköldsvik is pretty south.
Well, we had one of the earlier episodes was with a guy named Ian Gately, who came from New Hampshire, and he went to Boden. So, so it's really far up north.
Yeah.
So most people over here think of, when they think of Örnsköldsvik, they think of Modo Hockey and a few good players that have come through Modo. And you and I got connected. Tell us a little bit about what you do with Örnsköldsvik and your history and how you end up there, and maybe a little bit about your player career and how you got into coaching.
I can start. I grew up in Övertorneå, in up north at the Arctic Circle, in the border to Finland.
Okay.
I grew up in a small village, but on that street, my mom and her two sisters lived in the same street, and we're really proud of my cousin Daniel, who has been a world championship in hockey, and my brother as well. So we had two world championships in the same street from Övertorneå. We had no hockey culture. So the journey started there. We got a rink around 84 when we were 6 years old. So in the childhood, played a lot. We sported many sports, everything who was looking on TV, we did. And our father supported us so much to sports. So pretty good for me. And then I went to Modo Hockey and the hockey gymnasium when I was 16.
Okay.
And then it was only four hockey gymnasium was for the whole country at that time. So it was and the Peter Forsberg era in Modo, and so Modo was that was the number one in Sweden, and I got a spot there. So I took my bags at 16 and moved there. I was there for 2 years. Then I saw because it was so many good players in Modo. And I was not
So who was there at the time so you're 19, you're a little younger than me, 1978. So
the guys played, we had Pierre Hedin, who played in Toronto, and Per Holberg, who was a big player in the Sweden, from my grade. Then we had lots of Samuel Paulsson, was born 77. And lots of other players, but then we have the Sedin brothers came from under, and Matthias Kalin was a really good player here at that time, and we had lots more. It was, I don't know, I think we were 18 players who started here, and the first camp for the national team, we were 14 or 18 who went to that camp. So it was good.
Yeah, I've heard of the Sedin twins. I think some people have heard about them over here too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
they're pretty famous guys.
They've done okay. They've done okay. What about, so let me back up just a second. So did your father play hockey?
No, that's why he didn't know. Like he had a his family had a business, and he had to work, like so he couldn't do the thing he wanted to do in sports. So he had took his energy from that, like to my child are going to do sports.
Yeah.
So he's so supportive in that, and he had been running with his car. I don't know. I think one game he came and he ran 700 kilometers one way, and just
Wow.
watched me win game. So he has been really supportive, and he, as my brother as well, he had 160 kilometers to like the home games, and he was like he's watching every game.
Wow.
So he's the big thing for us. What was the question again? I was
Well, it was about your dad,
that.
and I'm just for people that if you're looking up Urban Umarc on Elite Prospects, I think it's interesting because Elite Prospect does a great job because they're linking family members, and you can get so much information just from the basic information on a player, and I love it because people can click on Evertorneo, and then you can go in and Google where that is and get a glimpse of where actually that is in relation. And then also, yeah, there's you, your two brothers, Linus and Jörgen, and then says cousin Daniel Henriksson. And when you click on every one of you, pretty impressive. Certainly, Linus have had a little bit more notoriety, but everybody have had long careers in hockey.
Yeah, and we came from like where hockey was just like it was not no culture and nothing. They didn't have even a rink. So we are the first like generation who started to play. So been went pretty good for many guys, and you have the best up there like to do the sports.
Yeah.
You can go to a rink and have lots of ice times. And the biggest thing is that you are not that many players in the team, so you can play a lot, and you can play with the younger, and you can play with the older,
Yeah.
and so on. And I think that's the biggest thing to be successful today is to get the ice time.
Yeah. So making the step for you to Ervik and Hockey Gymnasium, was that a 'cause you were the older one of the three, right?
I'm the oldest one, yeah.
And how was that? Was that a big deal for you? And was that a automatic, or did you even think about?
No, I asked, so I'm
Yeah.
gonna be like, be a hockey player. So, and
And so if we then look at the, couple of years in Björklöven,
yes.
back in 95, 96, were they still in? And then I see one, two, three seasons with no, two seasons with they were in Division One, so they had dropped down. That was in the time where they kind of struggled there with the SHL team.
Yeah, it was, if you go back to when I had 2 years there and said it was lots of good players in Ervik, so I made a decision that okay, it was pretty obvious which players was priority by Modo at that
Yep.
time. Like
Yep.
some players you just know when you are in the group. So I decided okay, I had 2 good years like with a good environment, good practice, it's high level when it's so many skilled players. It was time to go where I am in the front seat, like
Yep.
as a player. So I moved to Björklöven and got that spot. And already in November, I think I went to the J20 team, but in November I start practicing with the men's team daily basis. And Division One then was the second league in Sweden, so
Okay.
then Allsvenskan didn't exist then, so it was like SHL, and then it was Division One, so it was the second league in Sweden, but it was a lot more teams. So I started to practice and get a few games with them, and the season after that I was at the men's team from the beginning. If I compare to my lots of the guys who I went to the hockey gymnasium with in Modo, who had really hard to come into the men's
Yes.
teams. So strategy, it was a good step for me. And it was could be really, really good step, but I had the second year we made it to the SHL.
Okay.
And at that time, so I didn't get a contract, or they had a contract for me, but in some way it just they took it back or something, and I was not there anymore, so I had to leave. But I can see how at that time how small things can do the career. It was like I had done it really good, like in the autumn. It was 18 games just before Christmas, and the last nine I was like starting player.
Yeah.
And at that time you only played with three lines, so it was tough to come into a team who wants to go up to SHL. I was star player for nine games. I think I made at that point like 1 point a game.
Yeah.
I missed one practice after Christmas because I was sick, and then I didn't do any more games that year.
Wow.
Because, but I know now, I know as a coach why it was like that. But it was tough to be a young player, but when you don't understand how it works in a team, because my performance was good enough, but for the team, it's better to have the experienced player to play because I'm not whining, but they are.
Yeah.
So, and know how that feels. But for me, it was like, okay, went up to SHL, and then I didn't got a contract. So, small things could change it for me that time. But I went to Nyköping and had many good years there after that.
And that was in the same, so if you look at the elite prospects, it is still Division One, and then they changed it into Allsvenskan, but it's basically the same level as what Björklöven was, except for Björklöven moved up in the SHL after that first
Yes,
season.
it was. You see, I 1 year in Nyköping with Division One, and then it became Allsvenskan.
I see. So, but new town, so living up north all your life, going to hockey gymnasium, then moving to Umeå, which is still up north, and then Nyköping way down south.
Yeah,
New
it's
fresh, new fresh start, and
yeah, it was. I think it was one of my, like my neighbor from Övertorneå, same age as me, who got a contract there. And because I made what do you call the army in Umeå, so
okay.
I was not ready before, like off in August, September. And he had went down there, and they needed some players, and I went down there, and they said, "Okay, yeah, we want you," and I ended up there. So it was, I don't know, can't remember this. It was just, it happened.
Well, and some pretty good years there. I'm looking at good numbers, good production. So that must have been a good move, as well.
It was a good move because I was in the top in the team,
Yeah.
played a lot. I had 1 year in the middle of that, I made a test physical, and our physical coach was early with like the heart rates. Like we, every test we did with was how the heart was reacting to, like.
Yeah.
And at the time I made a test, and in 5 seconds my heart went from 160 to 260.
Whoa.
And then he was like, we stop here. You have to go to the CT doctor. And then I have to go. And they found something who was not correct. So I couldn't do any practice and nothing for half a year, I think, because I have to go to the doctors and see what's wrong. But I found it after a while that why my pulse went like that. It calls VPV syndrome.
Okay.
You have an extra ledningsbana. I don't know the English word for that.
A transmissional source on the neurotransmitting.
Yeah. So when the heart went that way, it's I had pulses like who was over 300 when they measured. I had a thing in my chest, but they burned away that one, and then I could start playing again. So I almost missed 1 year at that time. But
so when other people had five gears in their gearbox, you had six.
Yeah. It was, but the six was not that good, because when you got that thing, your body was like milk acid in the body. You lose all your capacity. It was like,
yeah,
you have to sit down. So
yeah.
So it, but I think I had it for like all my life.
Yeah, it's amazing how sometimes, you know, situations like that. Just because of hockey, you were able to find it, and because you found it and got it corrected, you're probably here today. So,
yeah.
But if we fast forward a little bit, you know, many years in and played in Södertälje, in the Elitserien, which is now SHL, Hockeyallsvenskan, a year in Norway, a year in Denmark. And then back up north to Björklöven and Asplöven, which is Asplöven is, where is Asplöven?
Pretty close to my home village, like it's on the border to Finland, like.
Okay.
Up north, yeah.
And then.
I quit. Then, I can say. Those years was what I moved back. When I went to the hockey gymnasium, I met my wife. That's why I ended back in Örnsköldsvik after a career. So Asplund was the last year I like played.
Okay.
After that, just I do it for more. They wanted a player.
Yeah. But then, and then they called you back here. So this is interesting, because this is where I want to go. Your experience as coach, long player career. And then you get called back to Modo.
Yes. I was working like a normal job. And then I met Svartholt, who was going to be like junior general manager for Modo with Marcus Näslund. And I met him in my work and started talking and said, okay. I set up a meeting with Marcus. And, I went for a meeting and I ended up with the coaching in Modo. So,
and how soon after his career ended was he? Was that right after he was done in Vancouver?
He was not right away. I think he had 1 or 2 years. He was in the border or something like that. He played a little bit, and then he was in the border or something, and then he was the GM.
Yeah. All right, and then so going back, I mean, so it's not like you're starting back at U12 and U14 age group, you're going straight into Modo J18 assistant coach.
Yeah, and I think the thing I wanted to do when I had the interview, I said right away, like, I want to go with an experienced guy. I want to learn how it to be a coach. I don't want to, like, just jump into something, because, and that's my big, and like, the biggest lesson to all coaches is that never trust the player. And why is that? Because as a player, you only think about yourself.
Yeah.
In everything. So I want to learn how to coach. So I got a good learner, Lennart Hermansson, who had been coach for lots of years. So I went with him, and he had some other things, like in his administration things with Modo. So he let me take a big role, like in the hockey. And we had a good cooperation for 2 years there. So I got a good start, like, about coaching and learn how it is. And
good fundamentals right away.
Yes. And I think that is, you have to, if I'm going to give some advice to, is that, to go with someone who has been coached for a while, really good to learn, because it's not that easy to go from player to coaching right away. You miss so much about to be a leader.
So a few years there in Modo, and some good players and some success. Tell us about that. 6 years in Modo.
6 years in juniors with Modo.
Juniors.
I came in a really good time. At that time, Marcus had been, like, Modo was had struggled a lot at the juniors for a couple of years. And now he want to make Modo as it was earlier, like, they put lots of money in it.
Yeah.
We went from, like, we was, I think, seven full-time coaches in the staff, two in every team, and then you have, like, the GM for the juniors, and you have a goalie coach and everything. So we had a good staff, start building a fundamental how we're gonna do everything. And the other thing was that they had started to scout players, like the guys who they took to the hockey gymnasium.
Yeah.
Was it was better players, and they want to have, like, top level players all the time.
Yeah.
To create that environment of competing hard against each other, and they're going to push the top even higher. That was the thinking about it. And we got result right away. J18 and J20 went to the SM final, like,
yeah, the
championship
final,
the first year, both teams. So, and that was the start of something that we could ride for 6-7 years. And we have me and Mikael Sundell was at that time all the time at the juniors. So we have, like, we know what we did and what we have made good and what have not went that good. So we could just, what kind of players do we have, and through more things to get, like, starting to be the, like, top junior club in Sweden for those years. So, and
Well, let's go there. What is it? What was it that made you successful?
Yeah, I think, and the like when we practice in the morning, we have like four coaches on 14 players, and we have a good dialogue between the coaches. Like, okay, what do we need to practice right now? Like in the individual skills. So if we are struggling in the J18 team with like the passing, okay. Okay, now we're practicing passing, and if so, the dialogue is everything.
Yeah,
about what we're gonna do, how we're gonna play, about the players who are gonna play, which role right now, like because of the development, and the most that was I think the success for the team and for the individual players. Because at this time we got lots of players who have been like working players because of like don't we could hold some back because they needed more ice time instead of moving forward too fast. And I think how I didn't see like I have to have my best team when I play. It's like I take the guys who are going to be play like for the players, not for me as a coach. And I think when we have that kind of thinking in the coaching staff, so you don't fight between the coaches, and that like I heard had has before I was there, like
yeah.
A war, like which player are gonna play where, but we turn it around to like see the players what they need all the time, and then I think about the players, like I said, why I moved from Ervik when it's so many good players. I was not like the top player they moved who wanted to be the successful. Is that how can you give the best players the best education and but don't lose the other half?
Yeah.
I think that thing of my career, lessons I take is like so many coaches like otherwise you just see the top and work with them, or you can try to work with the whole group and don't miss like the players who are not best right now, but they can be better. Every player who was in Mood had the potential to be a really good player. And you don't know at that age which player is going to be the best. You can see like the top players like Adrian Kempe or William Nylander or Dmitry Timashov or stuff like that. You could see, okay, fucking good players. That's no doubt. But still, we had players like Viktor Olofsson who was 1 year older and played J18 when they played J20. So I think the thing we did good was like to get the whole group with us and not like I felt when I was in Modo 20 years earlier was like you had a plan for the top, but not for the rest. And then you lost lots of players who became good in other clubs.
What is the secret then to recognizing that? Because is it just experience or is it resources to be able to, because you know, is it just short-sighted thinking that makes people think about this is what I have now and what I'm going to have success for? Or is it just that they don't know that this is a talent that I need to work with?
I think it's a little bit of everything. Because like when I started, I said we were seven coaches full-time.
Yes.
Mood went down to Allsvenskan
at yep.
4 years. My last year, I was the only full-time junior coach.
Okay.
That was why I decided to end. Like, I had at that time, I just want a break.
Yep.
And that was because if you don't maximize the coaches, like, work, you have to do be on ice like the morning, and
Yeah,
then you
yeah,
have
yeah.
to everything for the evening, and then you're in the evening. You don't have the time to develop things. You don't have the time to take care of every guy. If you have few coaches, you have to like choose, okay, where I'm gonna put the energy
Yeah.
in everything. And
And is
then
that
you can't help everyone.
what it takes to succeed at the highest level? You have to have both the know-how but also the resources to dedicate to feeding the players what they need.
Definitely. I will say, like, if I'm a little bit like the USA, how they do their national team program. I gotta say, they have never been that successful. Am I right? Like, to players to NHL when they started with that program.
Correct, with the North American development team.
And mood, when I went to the hockey match, mood was like a little bit like that. Like,
Yeah.
we had four in Sweden. Like, and I think we're if you create that environment for 2 years at that time before under 18, it's a really good time because you get an environment to create good culture, how you practice, and everything. Because at that time, the playing time is not everything.
Yeah.
You have to learn so much about
It's the
how to
development
be a
time.
professional player.
Yeah.
That's what you do under 18. And after 18, you have to get some time on the ice in games. And then you could spread them out. So I love how they're thinking. I think in Sweden, we have the old system is too old. It's time to renew how it works. Lots of little things. So, but the better players you have together, they're going to push each other and do great things. The problem when you do that in a club like Modo, you can't put 10 guys up in your men's team. You
Yeah.
have only one, two spots. And then the other guys like me did, okay, I'm not that guy. Then you move to other teams and then you become top guys in their team. So Modo didn't get the credit for the value what you developed
Yes.
right away. So, and the big thing is like Adrian Kempe, he goes up, or Kalle Grundström, but they are only for 1 year in the men's team, and then they NHL. So the problem in Sweden is to you if you have like we have seven co put lots of money in your junior program, but you can't get that much out of it. You don't get 1 year in the men's team and then you get NHL money, of course, but the problem is that if you compare to Forsberg, he was 21
Yeah.
before he left, and he made some big value for Modo Hockey.
Yeah, for sure. I'm interested in really comparing. We didn't really get into the comparing and contrasting between Modo and the smaller clubs. A big discussion about the differences between small clubs and big clubs, but the big clubs don't have all the solutions either.
No, and the thing is that I think many have problem when you see the compare the big club to the small club.
Yeah.
A guy who can be good in a small club doesn't mean he need to be good in a good club or in a
Correct.
big club. If you are a player who can be good in a big club, then you are a good player.
Yeah. And I think that that's the interesting part is in your new position, and we'll talk about that next time. And that is, with Örnsköldsvik hockey, and how can that be a symbiotic relationship with Modo hockey, and similar to how it works in Stockholm or in the bigger cities where they are 100% reliant on the smaller clubs for their success.
Yeah, and you have to have both in one way, but
Yeah.
you can do it alone. But I think that hockey should feel much better if you get the big picture.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah,
Thanks a
relax.
bunch.